Good morning. I apologize for correcting my husband in public. It's a very bad habit. So, happy to see everyone here today. I like the new hair. This talk is by special request. Some of you know this story, but Ling Zhao's Helping is the name of this one. So this is a story about Ling Zhao Pang, who lived in China somewhere around the late 700s. 700s to 800s, early 800s. She was the daughter of Layman Pang and Mrs. Pang. We don't know her first name. I don't know if we know, I think we do know Layman Pong's first name, but he just went by the last name. And Layman, he was a lay person, not a monk. So this was a wealthy merchant family, and their wealth enabled them to study the Buddha Sutras, so they had some little extra free time studying the sutras. And there was the mom and dad, Ling Zhao, the daughter, and the son. After Layman Pong retired, he began to worry about the spiritual dangers of his material wealth. And it's said that he and his family, they placed all of their possessions in a boat, which they took out to the middle of the river and sunk. So that story is just to demonstrate. I mean, it's not like an instruction, but it's to demonstrate their devotion to the practice. Like, if they saw something that would get in the way, just deal with it. And I know I've heard people say things like, well, I mean, now we think, okay, well, environmentally, not so good. Just dumping your stuff in the river. But this was, you know, they didn't really understand about that, I think, in the same way that as we do now. And other people say, well, you know, if he didn't want it, maybe he could have given it to someone else, you know, like a poor family who needed some things. But it's said that he realized these things were a hindrance, so he didn't want them to be a hindrance to anyone else either. So anyway, that's not really the story I'm going to tell, but that's just a little background about this family. And they were known for doing sort of like what would seem like kind of wacky things. So anyway, after that, so the retirement, the dispossessing of material things, then they traveled around to visit different teachers. So they were, you know, really exploring the Dharma. And they made baskets to earn a little money. They needed a little something so they could have a little food and maybe some clothes. So here's the story of Ling Zhao's Helping. One day, Layman Pong and his daughter, Ling Zhao, were out selling bamboo baskets. Coming down off a bridge, the layman stumbled and fell. When Ling Zhao saw this, she ran to her father's side and threw herself to the ground. "What are you doing?" cried the layman. "I saw you fall, so I'm helping," replied Ling Zhao. "Luckily, no one was looking," replied the layman. So that's the story. So did the lay training group study this recently? Mm-hmm. All right, so some of you are maybe a little more familiar with this. It's a good story for the lay training group. It focuses on lay practice. So what is this story about? My understanding of it is it's about radical compassion. So at first we might not see like throwing yourself to the ground when someone fell as being compassion. But what Ling Zhao did is she demonstrated her willingness to join her father in his suffering. So this is a kind of demonstration or a metaphor of radically joining someone in their suffering. It's not, rather than I am helping you, rather than me sort of up here, like on top of the bridge, you know, maybe reaching a hand down or throwing down a few breadcrumbs. No, just throwing herself down, demonstrating that there's the oneness of the helper and the helpee. They're really one. They're one body. So rather than helping you from a place of safety, if I follow Ling Zhao's direction, I'm willing to throw myself into the ditch with you. I'm willing to throw myself down and completely join you instead of running away or helping you from afar. So for me, it also brings up a little bit of a question, having had first aid training and first responder training. Like, how many of you have had sort of a first aid training? Some of you? So like the first thing that you're supposed to do, assess the situation. Is it safe? So I don't think that this story is telling us to disregard that instruction. And in fact, I think if Layman Pong had fell like into quicksand, that Ling Zhao wouldn't have jumped into the quicksand. But she might have thrown herself down to the edge of the quicksand and then, you know, reached out a branch. So to me, the main part of this story, the main lesson, is that Ling Zhao throws herself down. So whether it's in the mud at the edge of the quicksand or just in the ditch by the side of the river with her father, that doesn't matter so much. It's the throwing herself down. So if we try to help others from a place where we're somehow holding ourselves above those that we're helping, then that's not true compassion. We're keeping a distance. So we just might want to think about that and reflect on in the situations where we are helping people. Are we feeling that distance? Are we holding ourselves above? So we can think about, does that happen when we give money to a beggar? Or when we put a Band-Aid on our toddler's owie? Or when we help our teenager with their homework? Or when we care for an elderly parent? Or when we help someone at work? It's like, what is the quality of our helping? Is it holding ourselves above, or is it throwing ourselves down? So we might just, and it might not look so different, but there's something internally that could be different. So we can ask ourselves, in this situation, how can I help by throwing myself to the ground? Maybe not literally, but how can I have that internal sense of just meeting them exactly where they are and being with them in their suffering? So in the Race, Love, and Liberation class that Autumn and I are leading, and some of you are in, we've been looking fearlessly at our own suffering around racism and white supremacy, and deeply seeing the suffering of others. And a big realization for some of us in that class is that the only way we can really help others is to thoroughly understand our own brokenness and how we suffer. So that's like throwing ourselves down, too, understanding our own brokenness. So just to let you know, so that you can kind of come along with that group, with the class. In the class, one deep understanding from the people of color in the class is understanding of the suffering that's caused by the masks that they feel they must wear in order to protect themselves. So there's a deep suffering with that and a deep understanding of how that suffering operates. And a deep understanding from the white folks in the class is seeing the suffering caused by a tendency to turn away and to go numb, especially to the suffering of people of color and the suffering of in ourselves, as the white folks in the class, that tendency to, rather than feel it going numb, we don't want to be uncomfortable. We don't want to have the difficult feelings come up. So having that deep understanding is really a first step to compassion and healing. And I think this understanding is a way of throwing ourselves down, rather than immediately trying to fix the situation from a superior position. So the very act of throwing ourselves down points to how we need to deeply feel and understand our own suffering to begin self-healing in order to develop true compassion for others. I would say maybe so-called others, because in a way, there's no separation. But in a way, there is separation. That's the two truths. The relative truth, which is I am me and you are you. And then there's the absolute truth, which is we are one. So sometimes when people hear that and start to study Zen, they think, oh, well, the absolute truth, that's the better truth. So I just want to go there and hang out there. But actually, the teaching of Zen is the two truths. The relative truth is a truth. It's not like a sort of inferior truth. It's also a truth. And true oneness upholds both the relative truth, I am me and you are you, and the absolute truth of we are one, both at the same time. Now, our logical mind cannot fathom that. We just can't fathom that. But the mind of practice can. The mind of practice can fathom that. Or the mind of practice can touch that. So that's why, as much as, you know, I might like to talk about Zen and you might like to listen about Zen, that's not really going to help so much unless it motivates you to practice, whether that's practicing meditation and or practicing in daily life. Back to Ling Zhao. In Joan Sutherland's commentary on this koan, which, by the way, this koan is in the hidden lamp. Thank you. It has something with a lamp. The hidden lamp is a collection of koans where a woman is involved in the story, and then the commentary is by modern women. So it's modern women teachers and teachers. Anyway, Joan Sutherland is the teacher whose comments on this koan, and she says, when Ling Zhao throws herself down, her kindness is clear and unhesitating, completely without self-concern. It's also funny. That's important. Joan says, those are the qualities of her enlightenment. So that's pretty good. Here's the qualities of her enlightenment. Kindness, that's clear and unhesitating. No self-concern. And funny. A sense of humor. A lightness about life. So how about, luckily no one was looking? That's the response of her father. So Sutherland also points out that the father actually is not worried about some third person judging the event. That's not what that sentence means, luckily no one was looking. The one who isn't looking is ourselves, she says, our inner tendency for judgment that keeps us distant from our interactions and keeps us from actually experiencing our lives. So think about it. If she was worried about that, she would not have thrown herself down. If she was looking at herself to say, oh, let's see, is anyone around? Let's see, what's, you know, then she's lost the spontaneity of the moment, she's lost the lightness and the humor of the moment, and she's lost a deep connection to the unhesitating compassion of the moment. So the father saying, luckily no one is looking, is kind of saying, good job, daughter. So to me, this koan is a deep lesson for us about how to be in the world. Connected to others through compassion and connected to ourselves through being fully present in our lives, just as they are, without judgment. And also funny. It's important to be funny. So, I have another story, but since we only have really, I'd say probably about 10 minutes left if we're going to end by 10:15, so maybe I'll just stop there and share the other story some other time and see what questions you have or comments or insights. Yes.
When you ended the story with luckily no one was looking, mm-hmm. the conventional surface level interpretation of that, and I'm realizing since the last Race, Love, and Liberation class that I've been worried about what other people would think about what I would say, and so I can, I'm seeing now that that's a big hindrance because I'm worried that other people think I'm bad or not smart or not wise or unskillful. And I am unskillful a lot of the times. and in fact, I'm not sure exactly how this fits, but yesterday I was at a farmer's market, and there's a woman there was making this black-eyed pea and corn salsa salad, and she was handing it out as samples, and then she had a recipe, and it said University of Minnesota Extension, and this woman had brown skin, and I said, oh, this is really good. What's your affiliation with the University of Minnesota? And she looked at me and she said, I work there. I'm a nutritional scientist, like educator. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, like, I just assumed that you didn't work, that you didn't work there because you're not white. Mm. And like, and that was her, she was subtly like saying, hey dude, you know, and
well, I can think of a way how it fits. Okay. So, thank you. So, because one thing in the, not just you, but others in the class, especially some of the white folks in the class, and Autumn and I have reflected on this. There's a tendency for people not to speak because the white folks are afraid that they'll say something, either they'll say something to upset people of color, or they'll say something which will demonstrate that they're, you know, not as enlightened about these issues as they would like to appear, or that they'll seem stupid, or, you know, like that. But actually, if we don't say anything, then there's no way to move forward. So it's sort of like that's like throwing ourselves to the ground, to just say, and even if we're unskillful, and even if we're making mistakes, and, you know, even if we're corrected or not corrected, which in a way is worse, you know, then it's just like out there. But unless it gets out there, we can't move. So
even I can appreciate the people, the white people in the group saying stuff that isn't skillful, and then people are calling them on it. Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa.
Then we all learn.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's important. All those things are important.
Right. Thank you. What else? Yes.
Well, the throwing yourself down kind of reminds me of the full prostration.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Which is like what I do here, you know.
Which mm-hmm. I thought was kind of foolish when I first started coming to the Zen Center. Like, why are they doing that? And of course, now that I do it, and I do it at home in my own personal practice, and there's such a release and such a liberation in the form of the full prostration.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of reminded me of that story. If you are inhibited, like sometimes doing it in front of a group,
mm-hmm.
I notice it's kind of up the ante a little.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to really, to do it in complete wholeness, you have to do it with the whole group with you.
Mm-hmm.
And not, you can't have that separation. Mm-hmm. Prostration, the form is lost.
Yeah, yeah. So even like, well, if there's a teacher doing the bows, the full prostrations here, and other people aren't doing it, or they don't look like they're doing it, but if you join the teacher, you know, mentally, or, you know, not even just mentally, but just psychically, you know, your whole being is like you're one with that, then that's stronger. And that's actually what it's supposed to be, like the teacher, the leader here is doing those bows on behalf of the Sangha. So it's like just everyone doesn't have to stand up and do them, but it's not just me or the teacher, it's everyone just being represented in that one form. Yeah, thanks. Yes.
I love the Pong family. There are some great stories. I've learned a lot about parenting from the Pong family, I think. Mm. And one of the things that I really like, Ling Zhao, the daughter?
Ling Zhao, yeah.
In almost all of them, Ling Zhao has the last word, and she proves to be the wisest one of the family, the daughter. And so it's really taught me an awful lot about keeping my ears open for the wisdom of people younger.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because there's a tendency, I don't know, but for me, anyway, to think of, well, I'm an older person, I'm a wiser person. And if you work with children, I'm sure if you may have a lot of experience with that where you have to think in those terms yourself. I'm an authority figure, but yet I must open myself to the wisdom of this child and listen to them and really hear what they have to say. And so I think that there's always something interesting that she has to say that causes the parents to go, ah, okay, that's really a good approach. So I try to keep my ears open and often fail.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Something that really struck me within the story was about the attachment to the things and giving up that attachment. And I really resonate with that. There was a time in my life I went on a spiritual mission, and I gave up my job, my material things, my vehicle, and there's something freeing in that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it feels like a 1,000-pound backpack that you just finally drop off when you let go of these worldly material things. And thanks. I just wanted to say thanks for sharing that. And it's something that I personally did, and it's very freeing spiritually. So.
Thank you. Well, I feel that I would be remiss if I didn't say that, mention that Dee Dee's father passed away last week. So there's a deep suffering that I think we all would like to share with you in that. So. And I think maybe time for one more question or comment, if there is. Yes.
The one word that you mentioned, practice, resonated with me.
Mm-hmm.
The way I look at the world and people, and they are finding their own paths spiritually, creating their own church to give them peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Really, what the way I look at that is that whatever is, is regardless of what you think it should be or what you created in your own mind as far as religion or spirituality. It is.
Mm-hmm.
But practice, and you're talking about I'm me, you're you, we're all one, but the I'm me part, I really like the idea of what am I practicing?
Mm-hmm.
That's really what's important.
Mm-hmm.
Is our spiritual leaders. They practiced.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus practiced.
Mm-hmm.
Buddha practiced. Gandhi practiced.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to be a good practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good goal for all of us. Be a good practitioner. Practice deeply. And know that I know I've talked about this a lot, but just another plug for meditation practice. It can really help you because it's a way of practicing. Like if you're a musician, you might spend time practicing scales and arpeggios or drills, you know, that's not the song itself, but that you need to do in order to have the music. And so it's kind of the same with Zazen. You're practicing sitting because it's a little bit easier to bring your awareness and to cultivate your wisdom in that setting, and then you can have that in your daily life. You don't have to wait either. You can still practice in daily life right away. You don't have to wait till you're good enough. But in the meantime, if you're also taking time to practice the scales and arpeggios and drills of sitting Zazen, you probably will benefit you deeply. So anyway, let's close and have a picnic. Thank you.
The closing chant is on the front of your bulletin. May our intention equally penetrate every being and place.